Welcome to the Florida Real Estate and Entrepreneur Podcast, where we interview the best and the brightest business and real estate leaders. Our mission is to inspire and help 1,000 entrepreneurs to start and succeed in real estate and entrepreneurship. We will give you the exact playbook to succeed in your business through the experience of those who blaze the path. We're bringing the what's working today directly to you. Let's get started. What's up, everybody? We've got the magnificent Ryan from Ryan Halo and Ryan Halo Consulting with us today. Ryan is a multi seven-figure entrepreneur and the founder of Salon Halo Salons, which specializes in education and personal development, as well as Halo Consulting, a leading growth strategy firm for small businesses. She's got almost two decades of experiences. She's founded, she's grown, she's helping other people start up and scale their businesses. She is one of the most amazing entrepreneurs I've ever personally met, and I'm super excited to have you here today, Ryan.
Thank you, Adam. That was so kind. It's so sweet. It's very touching. That means a lot. It's crazy considering the fact that I'm shy of 34 that we can say it's almost two decades of business experience, but that is indeed the path that I've been on for most of my life. So, wow.
Crazy. Yeah, it's incredible. And I had the pleasure of meeting you and getting to chat with you a couple times in Tampa and in the local area. But for those who don't know your backstory, which is probably one of the most incredible I've ever heard, what happened in your life and what got you to the point where you decided you were going to be an entrepreneur and take that leap?
Well, it is a doozy. Most people that I meet that just see where I am here today assume that I must have always known what I wanted to do, right? That is not the case. I really thought that I was going to be a lawyer or something in that vein. And yeah, so I moved down to Florida when my family, I think 95, I was about 5 years old. We came from New York. It was a lot of New Yorkers coming to Florida and ended up in Spring Hill. A lot of people, if you don't know where that is, there's a reason. It's a little baby town. So I was told at a pretty young age that I was destined to go to an Ivy League college or something of that magnitude to make the most of my potential. I had tested into the gifted honors program in third grade, and I was the only kid from my school getting bused to a different school, to a special program, and all these things. So it was really instilled in me that to make the most of my potential, that I was going to want to take that track. I believe that I was destined to take the traditional college route, and that was really going to be the only way to maximize what I was told was my potential. So I'm going through that, getting into about middle school now. I was hitting my bit of a social butterfly stage and kind of tethering the line between the honors classes and then social life and the art. And I love to sing and draw. And my mom had been a very successful nurse, young parent, very responsible. We did come from a lower income background. Once they got, my mom and my dad got divorced, we still continued to function as a family unit. There was, you know, Sunday dinners together. Me and my brother would go to my dad's house on the weekends, and it was still a very peaceful, amicable life. All of that changed on Super Bowl Sunday, 2001. My brother did not come home from my dad's house from weekly visitation. I had not gone there because I think I was actually grounded for something. And I was like at my grandma's house playing Monopoly with her, and we got a phone call. And my mom said my brother hadn't made it home, and it was a few more hours of calling the Florida Transportation, just trying to see what might have happened. And she actually took the drive over there and discovered that my dad had taken the life of my little brother and himself.
That's tough.
You can imagine that really changed the trajectory of my life and my whole family's. My mom went from being that successful, responsible parent to eventually no longer working, and she had a new boyfriend, and things started to get really toxic in the household, and she actually developed a dependency on prescription drugs. And that's where we don't have enough time to get into all the details today, but it got so tumultuous and unstable So I knew, I've always been very driven and very independent as a person. I don't know where that comes from. I wouldn't say that the events that I experienced changed that, just maybe amplified it a bit. I realized that I needed to not look externally for the resources and the things that I wanted in life, or that I wanted to, the opportunities that I was looking for. And I just decided I'm going to, if I want something, it's on me. I ended up leaving the household at 15, 16. I was staying with different friends and maybe even some not so great or safe places. There was a lot of drugs and alcohol in the town at the time. Opiates were at a fever pitch. So it was a really unstable time in my life. And with feeling like I had no way to go forward in school, I did, for probably the first and only time in my life that I can remember, I became pretty hopeless feeling. Like, I lost that sense of hope for what was possible for me and could not see a path through the circumstance that I was in, again, surrounded by lots of drug addicts and darkness. And I'm 15, 16 years old, just, I knew I had this light in me and this passion and drive, but I didn't know what the path would be to reach the fulfillment of what I was told for so long I was capable of and believed of myself. And all that came to a head when a woman offered me $25 a day to be her personal assistant at a hair salon. And I believe that I could have easily set up $25. That's not even minimum wage. But for me, I was just so excited to have a path to do something other than what I was doing, and didn't really think twice, and I just said yes. And from there, within a few weeks of working for her, the owner of the salon essentially hired me for $50 a day when she wasn't working. So now I've got a full-time job. The tips are going up. My happiness is through the roof. I feel such a sense of purpose and ability to utilize my natural gifts, such as, first of all, I never wanted to sit down. I was always looking to clean something, learn something, offer help somewhere, run to the store, get everybody coffee. Like, I didn't have a car, I didn't have a license, but I was figuring out, when there's a will, there's a way. And I know that's a kind of a cliche thing to say, but that is like me to a T. I will figure a way out. So this escalated quickly, and I started to develop an appreciation for the industry that I hadn't had previously. I thought it was all just chatty, fun, doing hair. The stylists that I grew up watching, like, smoking cigarettes, talking on the phone, like, just like very casual. But I learned that you can systemize the process of customer service and delivery of the beauty services in a way that was very encouraging. And I learned, my stylist that I worked for was booking on the 15 minutes. She knew, wrote all her formulas down. She had a go-to for different scenarios. Then there was the aspect of how geometry and chemistry played into doing hair. I'm like, wait, I knew I loved art, but now I can use both sides of my brain to put together to really stand out and flourish. So that was my intro to hair as a viable career.
Wow. Yeah, you said a couple of things that, I mean, I know a lot of entrepreneurs. I know a lot of business owners. I'm fortunate to be networked with folks like that. And you just said yes. I just said yes. So there's two things that really stand out to me that are things that I see all the time in people. When we have, and I'm not dissimilar from you, Ryan. My mom was a crackhead. She died when I was 17. I was out on my own in a similar situation. But there's something about that kind of trauma in your life that drive. I see people take one of two paths, mm-hmm. right? You either are driving away from it to get so far beyond it from a level of success and drive and passion, or you just fall down that same route and you become what they were.
Absolutely.
And I see probably the most impressive business owners, the most impressive entrepreneurs are the ones who have a similar situation. It's really fascinating. But you just said yes, you made the jump to introduce yourself to the industry and work for somebody. I mean, the pay is not great, probably good for you at that time. You're like, okay, cool. I'll take $25 cash every day. That's good. But what was it internally that made you feel like I should jump in and do this?
Yeah, that's funny. $25 a day was $25 cheeseburgers back in those days. So yeah, it was pretty, all about perspective there. I'm trying to think back. You know, it's been a long time now. I think I saw the light. I just saw a little light through the clouds. And I was like, okay, not going to, basically grasping at a life raft, you know, any opportunity, and to feel a sense of purpose and productivity. So I had no idea what would come from it. I'm a hungry person, hungry for experience, hungry for opportunity, and not necessarily in a ambitious way. Just, I love to travel. I love life. Like, I love to meet people. And I think it was playing to that sense for me at the time. If I think realistically back to how my mind worked at 15, I think I was just open for anything. And especially when I didn't have anything better going on.
Yeah. You know, there's really interesting thing Jim Rohn writes about in his book, Good to Great. He talks about the Stockdale principle. Admiral Stockdale was this guy who was in a prisoner of war camp for 7 years. And they'd asked him basically, what was the difference between those who didn't survive and those who survived? This guy obviously went on to be incredibly successful in the military. But he said that everybody who had hope was okay in the moment. Mm-hmm. But the ones who would face the brutal facts of the day and continue to move forward were the ones that succeeded and got out of the prisoner of war camp. So it's like two sides to that, yeah. Because you got offered a life raft, as you called it, which was a glimmer of hope for you when you said previous to that you had started to become hopeless. But you also did what it took. You faced the brutal facts of reality and really just kind of grabbed a hold of it and said, well, I got to make a move and I got to do something. And I'm going to aim my energy at something productive. So that's really incredible. I don't know if you knew that about the Jim Rohn book, but there's, he talks a lot about the Stockdale principle. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, no, I agree with where you're going with that. And it resonates a lot. And I think it could have been very easy for me to look for all the reasons why I shouldn't, or why I shouldn't do that, or why it wouldn't work, etc. I did look naively a little bit down, I would even say, on the idea of myself doing hair. Like, that was beneath what I was told I should be doing. But the reality is, being flexible led me to a life that is far beyond what I think I would have if I went the traditional path I had originally anticipated. So being, you know, being flexible, being open to what really is possible for you. I mean, I definitely have an aspect of spirituality that guides me in a lot of things as well. And I'm very strong-willed, but I've learned to soften. It's kind of like an ego thing, right? Like, if we think we know it all, we want control, this is what's right. I've learned by, like, softening that, I think the path that God or the universe, whatever you want to call it, what's been provided for me is far beyond what I could have imagined for myself. So I have to let go of my own sense of need to control or be right or think I have the answers sometimes, and see that there is possibility beyond what I can imagine.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Also, I'm okay saying that, you know, I believe in God, and I think it's okay to be honest about where you stand. I personally believe in that too. So some people may not, but everybody has some calling inside of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to fast forward a little bit, Ryan. I want to talk about, because so you go through this and you start working for somebody else, you start to see the inside of a business and you start to get fascinated by all the components of it. And this ultimately leads to you opening your own salon initially. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like, and how did you make that leap? Did you just have a bunch of money where you could start a business? How did that work?
Okay, definitely not. when my dad passed away, I think I got $10,000 or $20,000 total, and $10,000 went into a Florida prepaid college account. And other money, I honestly don't even know. But anyway, so I got all that when I was around 18. But at this time, did not have access to that. And I signed up for hair school at 16. I was one of the youngest people to go. That was another example of, I could have hit a lot of walls and just given up, but we kept pushing, we kept going. And surprisingly, I made it through one of the best schools. It was an hour away from where I lived. And it taught me that hair, the business of hair, even more. And I actually did not want to open a salon at all. I wanted to be an editorial stylist. And I was one of the only people who, when they would come in and say, okay, everybody who wants to want a salon one day, everybody raised their hand but me. Because I saw what that was like. And I wanted something, in my mind, better or more glamorous. So I moved to Chicago, actually, from 19 to 21, and was pursuing an editorial career, as well as working at a very high-end salon in that area. So I was opened up to completely new perspectives of the industry, and it was going, man. I was rocking and rolling. I was having fun. And then about to be 21 in Chicago was a very exciting time for me. Right about then, I get a phone call, and it was my grandma, and she said that the salon that my aunt owned was going out of business, and did we want to buy it? I would put in the $10,000 for my prepaid college, and my grandma would put in $10,000. My blind grandma, who's never owned a business, or run a business, I should say. So at first, I was like, oh, heck no. I do not want to come back to my little hometown of Spring Hill. And then that idea of just saying yes started to creep back in. So I thought about it, like, man, I'm about to be 21. How many opportunities am I going to get to open a business at 21? I don't want to leave Chicago. I don't want to leave all this opportunity here. But also, everything I had going on there, I could have came back to. So I just, almost against my own better judgment, said yes. And I had a flight back to Florida, actually, for my birthday 2 days later. So I flew back, and I just hit the ground running. It had no employees. It had no clients, really, at that point. It had a really rough time. It was not in a great place. So it was just me for about the first 6 months. I had a little base of clients that still knew me, and I would fly back and I would do their color, like out of kitchens and stuff. So the first week or two, I was rocking and rolling, all these appointments set up. But then after that 2 weeks is over, it's just you and the four walls. So I tried to, what?
Oh, I want to dig into that just a little bit, because I think this is, number one, that's incredible. Like, just taking the leap, it's, you know, buy the business for, I know people who have bought multi-million dollar businesses with no money out of pocket and did like owner financing where they financed it back. So like, just to take the leap, and for, you know, people need to understand, it's not as, you don't have to go spend $20 million to buy a business to have a business. There are a lot of ways to acquire a business. I think, you know, find a business that's not doing, that's, you know, kind of on its last leg and can be revived with some life grown into it. But I want to dive a little bit into client acquisition, because marketing and sales. So every business in general has, you know, somebody in charge of it, potentially an operator below them or a visionary and an integrator. They have marketing and sales department, could be a person, could be a one person show, but there's always marketing and sales. There's operations, like the thing that's happening. And then there's HR and finance in every business. So you basically take this thing over and you're a one person show at first, and you've got a little bit of a client base that you're able to kind of bring through the door to the first couple of weeks. Now everybody's good for 3 months. So how do you go out and get clients for your business to pay the bills?
Great question. Well, when I tell you that I've always had a fire in me, I truly feel like a burning passion. And I knew if I was going to do this, I was going to give it everything I had and I would not fail. So that looked like every day, what was the opportunity there? So sometimes I was just deep cleaning and reorganizing and trying to make everything nice. And then other days I'm all dressed up in little like wedge heels and walking door to door, because I didn't have a car, mind you. I was living with my grandparents, back again with my grandparents when I moved back. And my grandpa would drop me off early in the morning and I would just be there all day. So I'd walk around with flyers that we had printed out by foot, all the local businesses. This was back in 2011, so I mean, Facebook was not what it is now, but I was posting, I was adding people, I was sharing, I was watching videos through my software company to try to learn about the actual analytics to process if I was creating a successful business and the results of my work. And I just never shut off. So if we would go out to the bar after, or I actually started dating the kid next door, the butcher next door that I dated for a few years, great guy. So I had a little couple friends and worked at the deli next door, and we would go out at night, and I'm doing consultations at the bar on hair. I am like, I just never shut it off. I go to the grocery store, I'm handing out cards, I'm servers. Like, so that's how my mind always has just naturally been, that when there's a will, there's a way approach.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful. You know, people think that you've got to, and you should do this at some point as you go to scale, but you don't have to go out and spend tens and hundreds of thousands of dollars on Google ads out of the gate. At the end of the day, marketing is so simple. Like, getting in front of your clientele, your mm-hmm. avatar, as many eyeballs as you possibly can to bring people into your ecosystem is the essence of marketing. Knowing who your client is, first and foremost, down to the nitty gritty detail, and then getting in front of them to give them some type of an offer. I do hair in this location. Come get your hair done. Mm-hmm. Like, that is what you're, you know, hey, your hair is great. I could do this, that, and the other. But that's what you did. You went out and you did it, and you hustled it, and you put flyers out and you handed cards out. That, I mean, that's really incredible from a marketing perspective.
And I could go off on a soapbox tangent about the way that pop culture has evolved in some regards. I partially blame social media, that there's a lot, there's a mindset in some circles that balance is everything. Hustle culture is bad. And while I agree with some of that sentiment in the correct time and place, I think it's a huge disservice to the mindset of young people around what's attainable, achievable, possible, realistic for them in their lives. And it's really unempowering to think, well, if I'm not perfect at something immediately, then I shouldn't do it. If it doesn't feel good, I shouldn't do it. Like I said, I could really get into this because it's so sad that it's robbing people of understanding how powerful and capable they are. And there's one prong of that where everybody just wants to post the good stuff, the highlight reel, the overnight success that actually took them 10, 15 years to achieve. You know, you have to be honest about, and that's why I'm like, all day we'll talk about the struggles. All day I will talk about the reality, even now, of the challenges of a position, the position I was in then, the position I'm in now, the position I'm gonna be in. Like, I understand that there's still gonna be struggles, and you have to be honest with that. Because if you just tell the rest of the world and younger generations, especially are the ones on social media watching what people are saying, that everything's great and you only share the easy stuff, when they hit a roadblock, when things don't just come easily to them, they're going to think, oh, there's something wrong with me, or there's something wrong with this path. And that's just not the reality. The reality is you're always going to be hitting stumbles and roadblocks. And it's just a matter of resiliency and flexibility. Like, okay, how am I going to pivot through this? I just recently was listening, I don't even know what it was. I think it was like Founders Podcast, where he was talking about a principle of business is just a forever set of challenges. What determines your success essentially is how well you're able to navigate them with the least turbulence and the best outcome. So if you go into honestly anything, life in general, and you're always waiting to, oh, when are things just going to be easy? And when am I never going to have any rocky points? That's, you're just setting yourself for constant disappointment and unhappiness, instead of looking at, okay, how can I rise to challenges? How maybe have less stress in dealing with it. But the sooner you accept that the obstacle is the way, that's another great book.
Yes.
Then the better, you can just have fun with it, you know?
Yeah, honestly, it's really fascinating because I think I have a unique take on balance. There's this dichotomy between the like Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week, where people think they're going to become, you know, millionaires at the age of 22 and work 4 hours a week, versus this like extreme hustle culture. And I think we make it too black and white. Mm-hmm. Life is not that black and white. You know, people have families and kids and they want to make money. And the reality is, you know, it's actually all really simple. It's just not easy. Mm-hmm. And it definitely works if you work. Mm-hmm. Like, there are normal people in all these industries who have built seven and multi seven figure businesses that are just normal people. They just put the work in, and balance comes over a long period of time, right? Like balance isn't in my 24 hours today. Did I spend 4 hours doing this, 2 hours doing that perfectly? 1 hour. The world doesn't work that way, especially if you're an entrepreneur, you're putting out fires. Some days will be the craziest day you ever had. You're on for 16 hours and some days are, you know, hey, I've got complete freedom. I can go do whatever I want to do. So I think there's certainly a dichotomy there. And it does give people a false sense when they start to compare their chapter one. So if I'm a young entrepreneur and I want to start a salon and I'm looking at you and I'm going, well, look at what Ryan's doing. Why isn't mine working like that? Well, you're on chapter 10. You've been through the ringer. You've dealt with cash flow issues and underperforming staff and all the hard headaches that come with being an entrepreneur and a business owner. People don't see that part because nobody's posting like, oh, I have extreme cash flow issues right now because of X, Y, and Z, and I'm solving this problem, which is not uncommon for almost any business, by the way. Those kind of things happen all the time. So I think you're spot on, honestly.
Yeah. And through this all, I think some of the biggest gifts that I've received are my understanding of the world, humans, myself. So that's the biggest gift. It's not the income the salons are generating. It's not the recognition. It's just who I've developed to be through this process by being willing to be honest with myself and put myself in challenging positions and work on myself internally and in general. That can never be taken away from me. Like my businesses could all go away tomorrow. Like, you know, COVID showed up. That was crazy. Companies could literally be shut down without anything you can do. I have friends in California that had their salons closed for 6 months or more. Like I realized that it's not about what I'm building because that could get taken away. Anything could happen. But who I am is priceless. And that's the real gold for me and what I've gone through and done.
Yeah, I think the real value, especially when you're bootstrapped and you start the business from the ground up, is you could get placed pretty much anywhere in the United States and probably go figure out how to make a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Because the business systems, which is where I'd love to go with this in our next question, but the business systems, how to run a business is not the widget for you is salon. The widget for me is real estate, the real estate vertical. The widget for somebody else might be convenience stores. It could be anything, could be car washes, but that's just the widget. The business, how you run a business is really, it's kind of the same across the board with minor tweaks on the operation side. So what is it that you learned, got educated on, mentorship on for a business system? Like, did you read a book for business system? How did you know as you went along, how did you know how to design your business and kind of put the pieces together to build it into an actual business?
Yeah. So it was a lot thinking about the fact that I was 21 with a 10th grade education. When I started, I was pretty much working at the fundamental level to learn anything and everything I could. Biggest areas of value for me were when I invested in and learned about just human psychology and human communication, interaction, driving, what drives us, what motivates us, where a lot of these challenges and roadblocks that individuals face, super into personality styles and genius styles and all those things. So that was my biggest area of value to invest in, both on the consumer front and the team front. And through doing that, and I think I've always naturally been pretty, just had some natural gifts with the consumer and the sales side of things and just customer service. But where I hit a lot of walls in the early days was as a 21-year-old trying to tell people I'm the boss. It wasn't going so great. So building a team was the most crucial thing and is the most crucial thing, especially in the service industry. And I made it my mission and it's my genuine passion. I've learned to help other people succeed. In order to do that, I have to sometimes learn more about them than they even are understanding about themselves. It's a very interesting, delicate, rewarding, challenging thing to coach and lead and grow people.
That is absolutely incredible. We operate in our business off the Entrepreneur Operating System from Traction. Gino Wickman wrote the book. We're very Traction heavy in our, across all my businesses. Yeah. It's just really fundamental business 101 type stuff.
Yeah.
But what's really powerful is like you have an organizational chart in Traction, they call it an accountability chart. And really understanding if you have the right people, if they're in the right seat, do you have the person doing the right thing? So we also do personality tests. We use a company called Culture Index, which tells us who people are at their core and whether or not they'd be a good salesperson or a good transaction coordinator or something like that. So, and then you have a high degree of emotional and social intelligence when it comes to people. That's clear. Not everybody has that. Not all business owners have that either, which I think is really powerful. And I do agree that if you look across any business, even the biggest, most successful businesses, take Apple as an example. Steve Jobs does not have a high degree of emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. You know, he was known to be kind of a jerk, but he put the right people around him and helped the right people succeed to make that company successful and to make all those people massively successful, which is extremely powerful too. So that's really cool. I want to just, because I know we're up against the clock and I know how important your time is. So you open this salon, you get this thing moving, you start to learn business, but then you expand. You end up opening multiple salons across multiple areas. Can you talk a little bit about what went into the decision? Like, where was your business at to feel good about opening another salon, and what went into that decision, and how many do you have now, and what are you guys doing now?
Yeah, so I've looked back now that I am doing consulting and now that I am looking to package what worked for me, I've reflected on these last 13 years and really distilled each part of my methodology. And one of the areas that I didn't know I was doing at the time, but what I was doing is I would look at my individual team members and I would assess, what are they the best at? What are they the most passionate about? How can I help them grow? Because through that, the whole company will grow. So pretty early on, looking to divide and conquer and empower. If there was an area that I saw someone lacking that was my strength, I was working very hard to create a system that was repeatable, reliable, and transferable. So what could I just hand over to them, essentially, that would give them the best results the most percentage of the time? So we started doing that. People would naturally gravitate towards certain areas. We developed leadership within the organization. And I actually, around like 2015, I started traveling nationally for Paul Mitchell as an educator. So that was kind of my first tension moment of trying to remove myself and creating a little pressure for myself and the organization to do so, gave time to refine things. So it's like you build up, you get really comfortable, then you do something to stretch. And you're like, okay, now I need to fix this, this, and this. Okay, now we can stretch more. Okay, I fix this, this, and this. So before I opened the second salon, I had gone through that process and been able to create a little bit of distance between myself and every single day to day. Then when the second salon came, I think that was 2017, it was just plopped in my lap, similarly to the first time. Hey, do you want this salon? Almost no money needed to be put in, because when you really look at this, is a whole nother lesson, but salons specifically, every industry is going to be different, but the value versus the liability, like what am I buying versus what is actually a liability? It's like lease is a liability. It doesn't make me money. It's something I have to be able to pay. If you don't have a really strong client database, there's no value there. And on top of that, nothing says they're going to stay. Team members, like, so basically it's equipment that you're buying, and typically that's not worth very much compared to what it was paid for. So I had to say, do I want to buy this lawn, even though it's technically basically free? But I knew that we had done something that got systemized to the point that I could pick it up and pop down over here, and the liability wasn't so high that even if I had to get in and do a lot of the hair, I could manage it, like manage the pay, basic the payments. So, yeah, I just kind of said, well, this is another God handing me a new doorway, and I'm not going to, I learned my lesson not to say no. So I went through the door, and I will say a big part of being able to continuously grow is that I have the support of my team. If they had said, we're already stretched too thin, we're already, don't get enough of you or whatever it might be, then I wouldn't have been able to do that. And instead, every time they rallied behind the vision of like being one of the best salons in the nation, doing whatever it takes together as a team, and that stuff, that you can't fake culture. And you have to work on it every day, just like brushing your teeth, because it will have points of weight. You know, like there's highs and lows to that. And it's that every single day you have to keep working on it. So yeah, that's how we got the second salon. That was the biggest stretch I'll ever make, because Dub is your first expansion or your second location, because you're doubling. Your third, you're not doubling. You've already learned how to manage more than one. So the third was, I don't want to say it was easy, but it was something I'd done. It was easier than the second one, or the third one. But the third one was the biggest stretch financially then. That wasn't free. That was premium area, one of the top markets in the country, South Tampa, Florida. Rent, clientele, exposure, all very different. Bar from where the other two had started and even grown to. So that one I was actually pretty apprehensive about, because it was a big pivot. Our next steps were going to be, we just bought this huge piece of land and we're planning a development in Spring Hill for our first salon. And I felt like all my savings into that. Literally a month later, somebody offers me this opportunity in South Tampa. So I was like, I'm notorious for acting like a high D on the disc chart. Like I'm going. And I was like, I don't think this is feasible or realistic or smart for a company. But I talked to my leaders. I asked them, and I got a very surprising answer. When I asked them, do you think this is a possibility or a good idea? And they're like, emphatically, yes. Like, we got you. This is a great thing. It's a great opportunity. And I was like, are you sure? I thought I already was like underserving you and I'm overstretched. And they're like, no, this is, we got this. So like, shout out to like Brianna, Rian, all my team members are amazing. I can't name all 30 of them. They were very supportive. And what I learned too is, okay, this is actually creating bigger opportunities for them. Like, it's not just about me. You know, a salon manager position, what can be offered, stylists in from market to market, flexibility if they were to move, flexibility if they wanted a different type of clientele. That trifecta of the three locations and the regions is just such a well-rounded thing. So I'm so grateful that I did it. It's been tremendous for the company, but especially the team members that have been able to see newer and bigger opportunity through that.
Yeah, that's incredible. You're obviously, as a business leader, you've got a big vision, and good people stay with you because they can fit inside of your vision. It's so big. And, you know, to your surprise, obviously, they're excited about it. They're excited for growth and new opportunities, not just for the salon, but for them, too, to grow inside of. And that's a challenge. I mean, it's hard and it's lonely as a business owner many times where you're like, am I providing enough? Is this, you know, are these people going to stick around? Do they want to go somewhere else? But you keep expanding and you grow your vision and they grow into it with you. That's really, really powerful. That's exciting. So if you're in South Tampa, you need to go to Ryan's Salon, because that's the place to be and get your hair done.
Salon Halo. It's real easy. Salon. Halo, like the glowing.
Salon Halo.
And to your point, what you just said about growth and vision, that is like step one of my business methodology. And I call it actually grow and glow method. It's all about finding people that value the same things, that want the same overall from life, not just from a hair salon business or a real estate agency. And growth is one of our five core values. So I'm not gonna be a good fit for somebody who wants to stay very stable and consistent and doesn't want to rock the boat or get uncomfortable status quo. Like, I think that's a big part of the longevity of a team, is that everybody values the same things. It's not just about, you know, having a nice place to work.
Yeah, having core values alignment is, I mean, people come and go in businesses all the time. A lot of times the reason they go is because they're not a core values. We don't hire we should be hiring to our core values more than we're hiring to just about anything else. So I couldn't agree with you more. Ryan, I am so thankful that you were able to make this time work today on a Friday, nonetheless, which some entrepreneurs don't know what day of the week it is, but it is a Friday today. Super grateful for you. I'm super impressed by everything that you're doing. If people wanted to reach out to you, maybe get consulting or come work with your salon or see what you're doing, where and how would they reach out with you? What do you got going on? Are you speaking anywhere? You're going to have a book someday. You've got a great story.
Yes, it's inserting. the blueprints. So my main focus is now helping other teams grow in a successful, sustainable way. So, you know, being a successful woman entrepreneur, but not feeling like I had balance at certain times and stability. That's what I'm working. I'm looking now to work with successful female entrepreneurs with teams, but know that there's more potential to grow, but there's helping them overcome any fear of growth through a 12-step methodology that I use, because then you can finally get that personal freedom. We were talking about balance and everything. So it is very seasonal. But when you're in that season of your life that you're ready to get a little personal freedom, you have the team in place, I am a great fit to work with those people. Reach out to me. I'm going to be most active personally on Instagram. Ryan_Halo. Ryan has two N's. It's RYANN and underscore, and then Halo, HALO. You can definitely, I'm in the process of getting my personal website up, my consulting website. My salon has a website and everything, but hopefully you can just put everything in the show notes because it's,
yeah. Yeah. You can send, if that comes up before we air, definitely send that out. Listen, if you're a business owner and especially if you're in the salon space and you're kind of struggling a little bit or you're thinking about what the next thing that you want to do is, if that's growth, you need to reach out to Ryan. One of the most powerful things is having mentorship or having people who can consult in your life who have been down that path that you want to go down, who can show it to you, reduce some of those things that you're going to trip on and help you to succeed at a higher level. It's probably one of the most powerful things that happens in the entrepreneur space is mentorship and hiring consultants and things like that to help move your business forward. So if you're in the salon space or if you're a woman entrepreneur, you need to reach out to Ryan. She definitely can help you to grow and scale your business. And she is obviously amazing. So make sure you reach out to Ryan on Instagram, her Ryan with two N's. Make sure you get that down because that's, you know, that's different. RYANN_Halo, HALO. Ryan, thank you so much. I'm so grateful for your time today.